Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Talking about chicken a la king, mango and garbanzo tabbouleh, grilled potatoes and vegetables with roasted garlic and basil, zucchini ziti, granola fruit bar. Look at all this beautiful food.
Welcome to Green Eggs and Dan, where I interview amazing people with amazing minds, but all I care about is what is in their fridge. My guest today, hilarious comedian and writer. He's most recently written on the NBC series Grand Crew, and he's a writer on the upcoming Peacock series, Twisted Metal. Please welcome Iffy Wadiwe.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going well. Congrats on everything. You're doing it. You're writing it. You're making it happen. And you are, the reason I like that is because you're taking your success and you're stocking it up in that fridge. You guys can see Iffy's very well-stocked fridge on my Instagram, at StandUpDan. We're going into it. Okay, here we go. Yes. First of all, I don't know what kind of lens you use. It looks like some sort of fisheye lens you used.
Yeah, that's that new iPhone feature. I was like, I'm going to get up close and let you get the full picture by getting the 0.5 vision. So now you got a nice good look at everything.
I'm into it. So your fridge is kind of like a supermodel. It's very skinny and very tall.
Yeah. I know. And you can see, you know, That is coming into play with a lot of stuff here because, you know, not much room for wideness, you know,
no.
So it's a, yeah.
It's all very vertical.
Yeah.
like the top looks like a bunch of little rockets are about to take off.
Yeah.
Starting with, you got the truff, you got the hot truffle oil.
Yeah,
no, that's the hot sauce. That's the truff.
Yeah, that's hot the hot sauce. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny how it's placed so perfectly, but I did resist all urges to like turn everything so you can see. I was like, I'm going to just let you know what you're going to see if you just opened it. And the truff is in the forefront. I love it.
Wait, this is an amazing fridge for, well, okay. Do you have a family? Are you in a relationship?
All of the above. I have a daughter. I have a girlfriend who lives with me, and you know, I'm meal prepping because I'm doing like a lot of fitness stuff. So that's kind of what you see. Well, when we get to that drawer, I'll point it out. But that shelf back there, you see, it has some pre-made meals, and then that light and fit yogurt. Great.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is not a single dude's fridge. And if he tells me he's single, he's lying. There's a child somewhere.
Yeah, you know, the frozen go-gurt would give me away.
That's right. That would be very serial killer of you if you were just a single dude and you just loved your go-gurts.
I know, just sitting on the couch cross-legged watching Succession, just slurping down a go-gurt, like, yeah, this is the life.
Okay, then you have a lone, what is this, a mango up top?
Yes, it's a mango, and I'm glad we captured that. I'm actually glad because that is, now I see, I get the appeal. I already knew why this podcast was great, but now we really get to it because you really get a lot of story from random things in the fridge, like a lone mango.
Yes, so it's on the top shelf with all these condiments. Next to, in between a soy sauce and the hot truff sauce is a mango, just like staring at us.
Which you can tell, which we'll get into, that it is not the organizational plan we have for this fridge.
No.
But yeah, my dad was staying over my place for 2 weeks while we went to Japan, and he was watching over it. And he's just There's random things that he's just left that he's bought. And one of those things are a single mango. And in the freezer, there's catfish nuggets that he that he has.
Catfish nuggets from where?
It was just like one of the store brand pre-bought ones. Okay. I didn't open up the freezer to show it, but just know the freezer is a mess. That is just things stuffed there. We have so many dumplings and frozen meats, as you can tell, since I'm a meathead. So it's just not even pretty. But this, you know, we got a little something going on.
So here's where I'm getting a little confused. And this is where I think maybe you did stage something. Maybe you're a big fat liar. Because there's sodas here in the door. But then on this top shelf of the fridge, we're going back. We got the truff hot sauce. We got the mango, ass out mango.
Yeah.
We got the soy sauce. And then there's just a Sprite, a lone Sprite hanging out.
Yeah. See, that is just what you caught. You caught us midday because we don't normally drink a lot of soda. So I think we ordered out for some reason. And, you know, my girlfriend definitely does the thing where if you drink some of soda, you put it back in the fridge. I never do that. There's something in my brain that feels like if you put a half soda in the fridge, it's going to absorb all the smells or something.
Yeah.
I would rather let it get flat on a counter than to put it back in the fridge. But she is a proponent of half drunk sodas put back in the fridge. Wow. And so I guess she just put it there so she would remember to drink it, because there is a system that you can see where we have drinks and produce on the door shelves.
Yes.
And we have sauces. Normally we have them in the drawer where you would do the produce drawer. And this was a TikTok thing that someone pointed out, because they said you should put your produce and things on the side doors because you'll always know what sauces you'll need, and you'll always get those. So you don't need to like keep tabs on it. But, you know, your produce is always going bad because they're out of sight, out of mind. And you only think to get them when you're cooking something. So when you're constantly seeing your produce, you're able to go, oh, hey, let me use that. It's getting old. Whereas, like, you know, as you can see, there's the truff mayo. I'm going to get that when I get
it. This is kind of genius. I think we're glossing over this. So, but you picked this up as a TikTok trend?
Yeah. It was a TikTok trend that said you should put your produce and stuff on the shelf so you can see it every time you open. And like, you know, when you want mustard, mayo, ketchup, any of those sauces, you know to get them. You know, you don't need to constantly see them. And when you run out of those, you usually clock that in your mind. It's usually the produce that we forget about and goes bad. So
this is hilarious, because Iffy's CRISPR has truff mayo, regular mayo, like a bunch of jellies and jams, and it's got like the bouillon.
Yes, the that's a good eye. Yes, that is the chicken bouillon. Yes.
He's got chicken bouillon all in the crisper.
This man stews. You know about a stew.
But they look so, they're like, help, what are we doing in here?
Yeah, please. We don't belong here.
We are on the door. We have a good view of the whole fridge. Why are we here?
Yeah.
And the veggies are like, what's up, bitches?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you might want to eat me before I go bad.
Oh my God, that is so interesting. So I have a couple things to unpack. First of all, the soda, the half-drunk soda, is your girlfriend an immigrant?
No, she's half Japanese, half white, and
but born in America.
Born in America, from the Chutes, Massachusetts.
That is the dirty Chutes. That is such immigrant shit. Of like,
oh yeah,
that's like something my mom would do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that could have very well been the same person who put the mango there, but it was, in fact, my girlfriend.
I'm trying to give her an out like it's a cultural thing. Something cultural.
You know, growing up poor, that's the, you know, I feel like that's the Venn diagram of immigrant parents and people who grew up poor. It's like we do a lot of the same thing.
It's two sides of the same coin, except the immigrants are just playing like poor person cosplay a little bit. Like,
oh yeah, there's so many upper middle class immigrants who are doing things. I'm like, you don't have to do that anymore. You're good. They're like, nah. Nah, I don't trust it.
Yeah, my mom drives a Jaguar, but when she goes to New York City, she will take the public bus. I'm like, Mom, take a cab.
She's like, take
a cab.
Nope, don't trust it. I never did it before. Not going to start now.
She puts three masks on and gets on the public bus.
So here we go. I'm ready.
Let's get into these veggies for a minute. This looks like you went to H Mart or some sort of Asian market and got this. Like, you got the bok choy in a, in a bag here.
Uh-huh.
You don't, Trader Joe's don't do no bok choy in a bag like that. That's like the bag that's been like twisted around, you know, to close it.
Oh, yeah.
The hand twist.
No, it's you. You nailed it. That the, those are H Mart purchases. If you actually zoom in on the pickled radishes, you can kind of see the H Mart sticker hanging off. But yeah, no. Like I said, you know, girlfriend half Japanese. You know, pretty white presenting, but definitely that's when the Japanese jumps out when we step into H Mart. She's going to town. You know.
Oh my god! And then this is like, is this like? What is this, a melon of some sort? It's like
a squash, I believe.
Oh, it's a squash.
Okay. Yeah, weird ass squash. I think that's, you know, she has a plan for it, but I don't have any squash plans. I used to be real into spaghetti squash.
Yeah.
Remember when everyone was like, oh, you could just make spaghetti with spaghetti squash. And we were all just lying to ourselves and doing it. And then we finally realized that it's way too watery. It waters down your pasta sauce. It's not the same.
I do still, I haven't had it in a while, but I did go through a zucchini pasta phase.
Oh, yeah.
And I even got like one of the little cranks to just like crank
it was
out
like
my
the
own
the voodles or something. It was like a
zoodles.
Weird cookie. Zoodles, yeah. Yeah, you want to make some zoodles. Yeah, no, those ripped.
No, voodles are noodles used in voodoo rituals. Very different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, that I'll do. When you go down to New Orleans, you got to ask them about the voodles.
The voodles. They take pasta and put it into a little doll. And
Yeah.
It's very different.
Yeah, it's pasta and hairs of your enemies.
I guess if I had to look at this fridge and didn't know either of the ethnicities in the house, I would guess that there was some Asian in here. I would not guess any Nigerian. Is there any Nigerian influence in this fridge?
No, you know, other than the mango, which that can go for any immigrant parent. You know, that could be South Asian, that could be, you know, but that, you know, other than the mango, all the Nigerian influence stuff is in the freezer right now because he made a big stew. But, you know, when we make fufu, you know, that's just rice flour and water, so you don't need to fridge that. And the only time is when you make these big batches of the soup and you throw it in there. But that is definitely regular pasta sauce over that pasta.
Yeah,
but there is frozen Nigerian food in the freezer. So yeah, you won't get the Nigerian influence here. The only thing I could have done is if I had like a malt somewhere in there, which this like this barley malt drink. It's very sweet, very like thick, and we were obsessed with it as kids. And it, you know, I drink it as an adult, and it's like, all right. But, you know, I know a lot of like, you know, like Latino cultures have it because you can get it in the Mexican Mart out here. But I'm going to see what Google says because I'm not going to. Yeah. A malt drink is a fermented drink in which a primary ingredient is the grain or seed of the barley plant, which has been allowed to sprout slightly in a traditional way called malting before it's processed. So it's like. But that's, I think, any beverage, but it's a non-alcoholic drink that you can drink.
Interesting. So it's almost like a, so does it taste like beer, but it's like a non-alcoholic? Like
yeah,
it has that kind
not
of
like a
yeasty
flavor, but I feel like it would, if you drank it, you'd be like, oh, this could be a stout if you let it age a little more. Because it has that same kind of very full-bodied flavor, very sweet. Malta is the one that they drink a lot of, and then there's one with like a native dude on the front that was the one that was the big one. A Malta Goya is good. You can find that one. Vitamalt. I'm trying to see if I can find the specific one, which is not showing up. And you know, I mean, looking at where we've been as a people, they might have, you know, got rid of the, you know, native person on the cover. they're like, you know what, we shouldn't be just marketing.
Even Nigeria's going woke, guys.
Yeah. See, and that's why Nigerians have stopped. Yeah, that's their thing. They don't care about the gay cans. They care about taking the natives off of the malt. But also, Amstel in Nigeria, and that was the first time I had it. Amstel does a malt drink too.
Oh, no way. So is malt a specifically African thing? Or I guess you were saying Latinos do it too.
Yeah, Latinos. Yeah, because they malt a Goya. Goya, which is like the, you know, goat. They do a malt, and theirs pretty good. And I remember I bought it one time when I wanted to taste nostalgia, and one was enough.
Goya is like Mexican Kirkland.
Yes, yes, 100%. And I remember when we found out that guy was a Trump dude, and you just had all these like Latinos be like, it's like, what are we gonna do?
But their products are so good.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
It's kind of like Chick-fil-A, where it's like, I get it, but goddamn that sandwich.
That sandwich. I know. I'm glad Popeyes freed us from their chokehold. Popeyes said, okay, y'all need a new chicken sandwich. We're going to step it up for y'all. We're going to do
saw, it. There was an opening, and they, yeah. they jumped in.
Okay, so...
How interesting. Yeah, I've never heard of this, of malt. I can't believe it's never come up. So you're the third Nigerian on the podcast. We've had Ego Wodum. We've had Godfrey.
Ooh. Both Nigerians I know. I know Ego really well.
You didn't even fucking know her name. You called her Echo.
Yeah, I know. You know, because I was going to mention how we're right next to each other on the UCB talent page.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think, you know, I thought of all the other E names in UCB, and Echo just infiltrated. That's part of the Grand Crew PR process. They put chips in all the writers' brains so that we would randomly say different actors from the show.
Right.
And that was what that was. Right. So
the thing I didn't know about Nigerian cuisine and how fucking heated Nigerians get over it is this whole like jollof
rice.
Like,
yep.
Like the it's like fucking Biggie Tupac between.
Oh, yeah.
What's the other country that makes it that you're like, fuck their jollof rice?
Well, you know, you got these weird Ghanaians with their subpar jollof rice, and they always got, you know, they always got thoughts and opinions and how they think that it's better, but they're wrong. And there's the only way to say it. And I feel like it is a law that every Nigerian, when the jollof topic comes up, has to point out that they're wrong and slander specifically Ghanaian rice. But there's a lot of different jollof rice that step into the arena. But the big fight, the Marvel versus DC, is Nigerian and Ghanaians. I remember I was dating one person, and
before you get into that, I need to just specify these are not the thoughts or beliefs of the Green Eggs and Dan crew. These are Iffy's opinions and Iffy's alone. If there are any Ghanaians listening, I'm sure your rice is great. I have not had it yet, but I just want, don't come at me. Don't at me.
You can come for me. I will let you know you're wrong. But you know, Dan, you know, like they say, you know, no choice is a choice of the enemy. So we know where he stands now, Nigerians. So just wanted to pump that up. Send that to the Nigerians. Look, Dan made his choice.
So you were saying you were going on a date?
I was dating someone, and they were like, I actually really like Ghanaian rice more. And I was like, okay. And as you can see, I'm not dating that person anymore. So just know, be careful with your words when you want to step into this arena.
You found a half white, half Japanese person who has no fucking clue what this rivalry is about. And you're like, yeah, this will work. I can mold her.
Yeah. Exactly. Make the right choice.
Yeah. I definitely need to have a side-by-side taste test. So here's the thing. Is there like a huge difference, or is it like, you know, Italians get like this where they're like, no, the pesto from this neighborhood is so much better than the pesto from 3 miles down. They use Highland pine nuts and we use lowland pine nuts. And it's like no one can actually tell the difference and Italians are just crazy. But is there like a humongous difference, objectively speaking?
You know, I feel like some people, I've heard some people be like, I really can't tell the difference, but you know, I don't trust everyone's tongue. I think it is just the way it's prepared. Ghanaian jollof, this is from the internet. Ghanaian jollof usually includes more spices than the Nigerian rice recipe. For example, ginger and garlic are blended into the pepper mix. Aside from curry powder, it could also be cooked with one or more of nutmeg, turkey berry, anise, rosemary, bay leaves, etc., as well as mixed vegetables. So, you know, they're adding extra stuff because they can't make good jollof rice.
Didn't even know what the difference was. If you read that and it was like, Nigerians add extra spices, you'd be like, yeah, because we like our shit seasoned, unlike the goddamn Ghanaians.
You know, would that have happened if that was the way? The world may never know. I love that if you type Ghanaian jollof rice versus Nigerian, there are two different headlines that say the jollof rice wars. like it is so pertinent.
So crazy. I love it. I mean, look, I'm all about a good food rivalry. I'm here for it. You know, I want to be the Kofi Annan in this fight. I want to be neutral. Yeah. I want to be Switzerland.
Yeah.
No, that Kofi Annan was a deep cut for all my UN heads.
I mean, you got a big, demo of like UN fans. So, yeah. You know, fans of fridges and the UN. Yo,
shout out to my UNESCO peeps. If he kind of took my job of giving the interstitial about malt beverages, but I'm just going to give it a deeper dive. Non-alcoholic malt beverages have been around for centuries, with some of the earliest versions being consumed in the Middle East and Africa. The process of making non-alcoholic malt beverages involves brewing malted grains, which creates a sweet, malty liquid that is then flavored with herbs and spices. Yeast, which turns sugar into alcohol, is not added, hence why it has no booze in it. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, non-alcoholic malt beverages gained popularity in Europe and North America as an alternative to alcoholic beverages. They were marketed as health tonics and were believed to provide energy, aid digestion, and promote overall wellness. During Prohibition in the United States, non-alcoholic malt beverages saw a surge in popularity as an alternative to beer. However, after Prohibition ended, sales declined and many companies stopped producing them. Malt beverages exploded in popularity in the early 70s in Nigeria because they created a malt energy drink specifically for the army, which then became very popular throughout the country.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, I'm going to get to the questions that I ask every guest, starting with, what is your earliest food memory?
Ooh, my earliest food memory, actually, funny enough, as someone who is a super spicy boy, I like spicy foods, but my earliest memory is tasting hot sauce as like a toddler and like it lighting my mouth up and like trying to rub my tongue off on like a napkin and like, you know, my uncle and stuff, you know, laughing. So truly, that is my earliest, you know, food memory, is being attacked by food.
Yeah, it's shame. It's attack and shame. You were shamed by your family and you were attacked by the food.
Huh. Yeah.
But you still managed to have Truff hot sauce products on every shelf of your fridge and the crisper. What is your death row meal? Let's think of a reason you're on death row. I mean, it seems pretty easy. A Ghanaian guy.
Yeah. I murdered a Ghanaian in a fight.
A Ghanaian rice. And he's like a nice Ghanaian dude. He's like, yeah, man, I don't know. I'm down with your rice. I'm down with it. You're like, fuck you, pick a side. And you just like shove your rice into his face until.
Yeah. And I did not know he was allergic to rice.
Yes. You did not know. He had that very rare rice allergy.
it's the starches that get them.
I wonder if that's a thing in like privileged like people in Japan and China, you know, are like, that's like their version of I'm gluten free.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I like, do not. I don't eat rice. I have a rice allergy. All right, you're on death row. What is your death row meal?
My death row meal. Hoo-wee. I'm going to go, because you're making me pick one. And if I'm going out strong, I'm going to have to go out with one of my favorite curries. Is in fact Japanese curry. and mm-hmm. something that I was addicted to while I was in Japan. Even though there's one out here, I've already heard from sources who have been to both that the Japanese one smacks harder. And I gotta say, Coco's curry. And I'm gonna get the Coco's curry with the pork katsu. I'm gonna get the chicken katsu on it. And then I'm also gonna get the spicy garlic and some eggs and a little bit of cheese. I'm gonna go ahead and bump up the rice for the extra rice. And I'm gonna do a spice level 2. And that is what I'm having for my last death row meal. And then I'll have like a ramune with it.
I love people who take this question very seriously. And you just did that. So thank you. Fucking busting out spice levels.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to give you all the deets.
What are you going to have at the end? Ramune? What is that?
Ramune is Japanese ramune. Soda. It's in this bottle. It's a very kind of almost phallic looking bottle. But the only way you can open it is this plastic cap. You pull it out and there's like a plunger and there's a marble that's keeping it closed. And the plunger knocks the marble down into the second chamber. But it the way it's shaped, it keeps it from going into the soda. And then you drink it. Are you looking up a picture of it? Because it should...
That
sounds R-A-M-U-N-E.
That sounds like the most Japanese shit I've ever heard.
Yeah, and the biggest thing is you will 1,000% get caught up with trying to take the marble out. Because the top of it is plastic, but it is a very hard plastic. And you will 1,000% want to take the marble out without breaking the glass. That becomes a thing. I've used knives and... They put it on all the bottles. Do not try and take the marble out, but you're like, there's got to be a way.
Interesting. I've never seen this before. Yeah, so it almost looks like the bottle looks a little bit like an hourglass, and in that bottleneck is where this marble lies, and I guess keeps the drink fizzy? Is it like to keep it?
It's just a creative way to keep it closed. So instead of having a cap, you just have the marble.
Wow, how fun. That is very inventive. I'm surprised that your girlfriend hasn't come up with an inventive way to keep the soda from going, losing its the half a soda. Put a marble on top. This is like such a waste of engineering. Like this guy could have built like a spaceship with this mind. What is the best high-end meal you've ever had?
Lucky for you, you got a fancy bitch on here.
Yeah, let's go. Game recognized game.
Yeah, and you've had a lot of Angelinos on this pod?
Yes.
Because I do have like two I can go for. So I'm going to ask, has anyone said Inaka yet?
No, nobody said Inaka yet.
The reason I like this to say it on the pod is because if anybody wants more details on this after what I say, you can simply watch her Chef's Tables episode, Nikki Nakayama, on Netflix. And I did not know about her Chef's Table episode. I just knew that this was a hot restaurant that people were trying to, you know, eat at. And it was like buying like Jordans, getting a place there. And this is where, and please just know, I say this as, you know, before I go into this sentence, I feel like I have to preface it. I grew up in Compton, went from Compton to Long Beach, Northside Long Beach. You heard Vince Staples rap about it. And, you know, my parents, you know, they did what they could. And through comedy, I found TV writing to do completely insane shit like this. But I used my Amex concierge to get the reservation. Because if you have for all my points folks, if you have a Amex reserve card for Delta Sky Miles or a Platinum, you get their concierge service. And you can call them to like ask them to get flowers, or if you're going to a city, they give you suggestions. It's like really like obscene shit that you would never think to use. I've had access to this for years and I never thought to use it until I saw some weird, because I was trying to get seats here and it was so hard. And someone online was like, oh, you can ask the Amex concierge. And like literally what if you ask them, they take your card and they create a talk account, and then they wait every Sunday and try and get reservations for you. And so you can, and they'll call you every Sunday, and then eventually they'll be like, hey, I'm just asking because, you know, they want to ask for permission because they are using your money to do it, because you have to put like, I think it's like a $200 deposit. And so they're like, hey, you know, we've been doing this, but if you want, we can try for X amount of time. And, you know, you just got to give me permission to just, you know, use your card, like basically
wow.
at will for this. And I was like, yeah, sure. And it took them 2 months. And then they finally gave me the call and it was like, hey, we got you the reservation. And so
jeez.
The whole reason it's so hard is because there's probably, I want to say maybe 15 tables in this like place. There's like 15 tables, mm-hmm. maybe less than that. I would say anywhere from 10 to 15 tables. And it's an omakase, which is the Japanese like flight style of their food system.
Yeah, it's just like, we're going to give you what we think you need to have.
Yeah, yeah. And it's from a Japanese phrase, which means I'll leave it up to you, because it's the chef who's going to keep, like, they've decided it. You're not going to order. You pay.
Yeah.
And then they will give, like, I think it's like a 13 courses omakase. Okay. And they give you, you know, all the details with each course, and you can do a wine and sake pairing, and then they give you all that extra detail. And she keeps a folder of you when you get a when you go there, and writes down everything you ate so that you will never eat the same thing when you come back.
That's crazy.
So, and then when you're done, she gives you this like homemade pack that you have the next morning with this homemade granola bar and teas. And so you get this little pack and you have like tea and granola the next morning, so that it continues from there. And wow. it's this whole like very intimate experience. It is bread. I'm going to let you know right now. And by bread, I mean money. Like I think for it was me and my ex at the time. And well, my girlfriend at the time,
yes.
my ex, who was my girlfriend at the time.
We just had to hash out a couple extra details. So we went yeah. to Inaka together.
Yeah. We went to Inaka, and I think it came out to about like around $1,200. Whoa.
That is the high end. See, they get you on the pairings too.
That's yeah. Where, that's you, where you get you clocked it immediately. It's Dan, we've wine. Been on a wavelength all damn day. And you're right. That's exactly where they got it. And then I got burned again, because the second place I was going to say, but I'm not going to go into detail because that isn't the pick, is Cam 4, where same thing. I got the yeah. wine pairing with that, with the damn sommelier, and then it came out for two people like $900. I was like, that they got my ass again. But
that's how they get you. Yeah. I'm over the wine pairing. I rarely you do said, the wine I'm pairing done. Anymore.
You're like, I'm
you know, because here's the thing. A, I'm getting like little pours. I like to drink. All right. Mm-hmm. I like the sauce.
Oh yeah.
I'm getting these little pours. It's very white heavy. I love white wines, but like I like red wine more. I know it's not hip to say that. But it's always like there's like one or two reds at the end. And like I also have a lot of good wines at home. Let me preface by saying I grew up in Compton. But I have a lot of good red wine at home. And I bring a bottle now and pay corkage. That's the way I do it.
Yeah.
Because wines have been like, they like 10x the prices of wine. No, they like realistically, they're like 4xing now. And it's like, dude, I like for me to have the kind of wine that I want to have, it's like a fucking $300 bottle of wine. And I don't want to pay $300.
Yeah. You know,
for like a $75 bottle of wine. Anyway, so I'm with you. The struggle is real on the pairings. It's also harder to do, I feel, for like a, you know, a Japanese omakase, which like they're bringing sakis that I don't fucking know what this is, how expensive it is, and I don't want to bring like a bottle of Bordeaux for like a delicate Japanese omakase. Anyway, yeah. The struggle's real though. $1,200, that's wow, that's good. That's you went and did it. Camphor, was it as pleasurable?
Yeah.
Was it Camphor, worth the money?
It was nice. It wasn't as like intimate and like, you know, that like that whole, because I think that's what Inaka sells is the intimacy
yes.
of it. But Camphor was just a delicious French restaurant. It's in the Arts District. And, you know, we like I have a buddy, Farley Elliott, who I know through UCB, and he's a food writer now. So mm-hmm. he was like, oh, you should check out this place. You know, it's kind of new. Went, it was great. And then within the next year, they had a Michelin star. So I was like, oh, I feel like I got it on the ground floor. Like yeah. I'm a food hipster.
Yeah, you followed that band before they sold out.
I was like, yeah, yeah. You're like, oh, you're going. It's hard to get a reservation now that they got a little Michelin star. That's crazy. Yeah, actually, I was there before that.
The Inaka chef just got a James Beard nomination for Best Chef in America. So it might get even... your Amex a little, make them work overtime.
Let me go ahead and flex with him.
What's the best low-end meal you've ever had?
You know, this, it's so funny because, you know, being from LA, it's the land of the tacos and the danger dogs. And honestly, I'm going to go ahead and say I'm still holding down for our bacon-wrapped dogs at outside. They always come to you at the right moment. They're always $5. If it's any more than $5 and you're not outside the Staples Center, I don't know. Jay, go walk a few blocks and find that. But, you know, with inflation...
For the non-LA people, this is a very LA thing where there's like these drunk-seeking, like... It's like an abuela who will just like post up outside of a bar or a sporting event that's letting out, and they know that you're drunk. And what they do is they're cooking hot dogs that are wrapped in bacon on a sheet pan.
Yeah.
It's like a fucking sheet pan that you get at like a restaurant supply store.
And when you're drunk, and it'll be like a cartoon, the way that smell will go to your nose, and you'll float up to it with your toes twinkling and give them however much they're asking for. But yeah, you usually, if you want the works, it's usually the bacon wrapped dog, onions, you know, peppers, got a little cilantro. They'll do the ketchup, mustard, mayo. And it's just when you wake up the next morning without the hangover, you know that's what did it. You know that's what saved you.
I think that's the West Coast version of like the halal truck.
Ooh,
like,
yeah.
In New York, you get out of the bar and you fucking smell that cumin, that cumin and grilled chicken.
You're like, ooh.
You're like, I'm going to take a little trip to Lebanon.
Yeah. Let me do a little gallivant.
What is your favorite drunk food?
Favorite drunk food? I think that would just overlap into, you know, that. But I do love a good Taco Bell run. You know, a solid Taco Bell run, Mexican inspired, not Mexican food. but you know, it's truly good stuff.
That Taco Bell is the number one most requested favorite drunk food. What about the next day now? Favorite hangover cure? Is it the Ennaka granola bar and cheese?
No, this cure is so far from me now. But when I was in Koreatown, I lived on the street that had just every Sunday, it was just a strip of these like Salvadorian pop-up pupusas that was just up and down, which I didn't even know how they coexist because it was literally, I'd say about like six or seven different pupusas, but people were in line for a specific one. I've been to most of them and they're all the same. I think it is just preference on who's cooking them. But that was definitely my like jam. I would just roll out of bed, stumble down, get four pupusas, the sauces, and stumble back into my house and just munch it up.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but a pupusa is, aside from being the best name ever... It's almost like a corn pita, and it's like a sandwichy thing. Is that what it is, or am I confusing it with like arepas?
They're kind of similar, except it's more like a stuffed tortilla. It'll be a thicker kind of tortilla, and inside it will be like beans, cheese, sometimes meat, and then it's accompanied with this like slaw and sauce that you would put on it.
Mm. Favorite celebrity food personality?
Ooh, this is good. Guy Fieri.
Ooh, unabashed Guy Fieri fan.
Oh, yeah. Unironic, truly. I mean, I always got to, you know, Shane Torres, got to give him, you know, his flowers for being the first person to publicly say like, hey,
you got your money behind the wrong guy.
Yeah, well, just basically being like, you know, because, you know, I think everyone dunked on Guy because he wore the flame shirts and he had the frosted tips and it was just easy. And then Shane had to point out, like, he pointed out on in his set that he was like, he's a good guy. He like donates to a lot of charities and it's good. And then it was around that time that people started noticing that outside of his like, you know, usual uniform of like frosted tips and flame shirts, Guy has drips. He has drip. He has like chains. Like he wears chains, big watches and all that. And then I just fully came on the Guy train. I was like, oh yeah, He's that guy. He's cool. And he's just fun. And, you know, I've been watching the Tournament of Champions Food Network show.
Yeah.
And he's just like a fun character to watch. So, yeah, I've never beefed with Guy. And the reason I didn't is when I was working on At Midnight, we had a hashtag wars that was based off of him. Like, I think it was like Guy Fieri, a movie or something like that. And, you know, it was like, you know, kind of tongue in cheek, making fun of him a bit. And he played the hashtag wars all like along with everyone else.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. And we did a highlight on it the next episode. But like after that, I was like, oh, he is someone who like doesn't take himself too seriously. He loves fun. He like appreciated the gesture of the call out. And after that, I was like, no, he's a cool dude. So even though I was on the train before Shane called it out, I want to boost out Shane Torres because he did publicly call it out and get people back on Guy's side.
Yeah, if you have not seen his, I think it was a Conan set.
Yes.
It's so good. It's just about how Guy Fieri is like unfairly or maligned.
Yeah.
And everyone is like, Anthony Bourdain's the coolest. <He's> like, this is before he died, so it's yeah. like a little more acceptable to make fun of him. But it's a great it's a great bit. that's a good one. Okay. I like that you treated that like a court case. Like you first set out who it was. You gave out the evidence of why it was that. And then you came back and, you know, delivered your thesis sentence. Guy Fieri.
Hell yeah.
What is your desert island food? So you're trapped on a desert island. Ooh. One food you have to have for the rest of your life. You're never going to get tired of it.
And this, it's just the food. You won't like season the way you get it. You won't have any options to modify it. Like it is how it is.
You give me whatever you're thinking and I'll let you know if it's passable or not.
Okay, because I'm willing to say baked chicken breast because, you know, with any sauce, you can make it work. And I say that as someone because I am on a meal plan and have had baked chicken breast for three meals, 3 days in a row, mostly because I accidentally bought too much chicken.
Yeah.
I normally mix up the protein. I'll go between salmon, add some like pork here and there. But one time I get like a meat box delivered, Crowd Cow, shout out to them. Go ahead and give Dan some money, but it's like I got real into Crowd Cow during the pandemic because for some reason, like first I got into making steaks. Like yeah. I made one and I had a friend who she was a chef and she was like, oh, you could be doing this better. And then I really got good at making steaks. And then after that, I was like, I need to make Wagyu. I don't think I've had it. I don't trust the versions I've had because, you know, you go to any restaurant, they're like, oh, this is made with Wagyu, his and that, that and all this. So I really like did one of those, like, you know, at the time I didn't know I had it, but, you know, ADHD, hyper fixation, deep dives, where I really learned everything there is to know about Wagyu. And I was like, okay, how do I order this? Because I feel like it'll be cheaper ordering it than ordering it at a restaurant. And that was kind of true because for like a 6 ounce, you know, strip loin, you're still going to pay like $150-$200. But in a restaurant, half of that is what you pay for that, you know? So you essentially pay double in a restaurant. So I ordered it, went on a huge Wagyu kick, and they would always, you can get like these meat boxes where they throw in Wagyu and you get all different kinds of meat. Anyway, that's been my end all be all. And I was like, okay, let me order some chicken. And I ordered like a few pounds because I was like, I knew I was going to be meal prepping. Then I had the Japan trip, bringing it full circle, come up.
Yeah.
And so I paused it. And I was like, my dad's going to be here, so I don't need this meat to come. And I paused it. And I get back. You come back from a trip. Fridge is pretty empty. You're like, okay, I'm going to go. And I bought one of those large trays of chicken. Mm-hmm. Literally the next day, the box comes in the mail with another pound of chicken. And I was like, if I don't make all this chicken now, one of these are going to go bad. The ones that I ordered from Crowd Cow are frozen. So that's cool. But then the freezer was getting backed up because I wasn't doing any meal prep. So I literally sat down all day and I think I made, 20 meals of just all chicken. But the trick, if you're ever thinking of meal prepping, is season them differently. Do not use the same blanket one because that's how you will get tired of it. But you'd be surprised at how simply seasoning it, I'd say go to 3 to 4 different ways. And you won't get tired of it because it'll taste very different. And your brain doesn't have the chance to be like, I'm just eating chicken again. It's like, no, this is a little different.
That was the most spirited defense of the most boring ingredient in the kitchen. Chicken breast that I've ever heard. And, you know, I don't know. I was going to give you so much shit when you said that, but I kind of get it now. I will say, back to the Wagyu conversation, yes, 100%. If anyone is listening and you've never tried it and you want to try the A5 Wagyu, it's way more sensical to make it at home than it is to have it at the restaurant because it actually takes zero cooking skills to make. It's so easy.
Yeah, the reason is because it is so fatty, you don't even need to oil your pan. You just need to make sure your pan's hot enough, and you just put it on for about 2 minutes each side.
Yeah.
Do the corners, and you're good. And slice it, and it's so good.
I'm going to shout out my buddy Paul Feinstein has an article about the Wagyu Olympics in Japan, which is an actual thing that happens every year where they crown a prefecture the best Wagyu, and then like suddenly their Wagyu becomes more expensive than everyone else's. It's anyway, I highly recommend looking up the Wagyu Olympics Paul Feinstein article. Is there a food that you can't stand eating? Something that you hate?
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
All right, we're up to the last question, which is my favorite question. What is or are your restaurant pet peeves?
Ooh, that is a good question because there are some that are really, I think, you know, okay. All right, that's a good question. If I had to pick a restaurant pet peeve, it would be, and this is very silly, And if you're new,
this is a lot of lead up. I'm into this.
When you ask like a waiter for like a suggestion of something at the restaurant and they don't have anything, when you get the good version of it, it makes you realize the bad version of it. Because when you're like, hey, I'm thinking about this, what do you really like? And they'll say, oh, I wouldn't get that because the portions are this, that, and this. This one I really like because it has this flavor and this, that. But if you're this kind of person, I would go with this. And then you have some people that you're just like, oh, what is your favorite thing? And it's like, oh, well, people usually get this. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, I know. I just kind of want to know, like, you know, you probably eat here the most. And they're like, I actually don't. And then you're like, oh, okay. And I feel like that's a perfect pet peeve because I feel like a pet peeve is a thing that, you know, you really can't control. Because I could say things like, I hate when people don't ask if I need a refill or that. And that I think is just poor customer service. And I do get that people are busy sometimes. So like, it is what it is. But, you know, I feel like the pet peeve that is like silly and not that important is something like, yeah, I wish you like had opinions about the food where you work.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack there because I have a similar pet peeve, but ooh, mine is different. Like, I hate when I ask the server about, like, what do you think about this dish? And they give me their subjective opinion. And you're saying you want the subjective opinion. I'm saying I don't want it. Like, if they say, oh, no, don't get the salmon, I'm like, well, tell me why. Like,
yes,
give me the reason because you don't know what. You might not want the salmon because you don't like fish, but you don't know how I feel about fish. So, like, ask a follow-up question, maybe compare, you know. Or if I say, like, here are two options. Should I get the fish or the steak? And they're like, yeah, just get the steak. I'm like, no, break it down. Tell me the pluses and minuses of the fish. Tell me the pluses and minuses of the steak. Let me decide. You're saying, no, I want to be told what to eat.
Oh, no, not at all. I think we're on the same wavelength, actually. I like exactly what you're talking about where, because even if they're like, I don't like it because of this, it'll let me know. Because if I like that thing, you know, like then I'll know based off of their opinion. Like, I don't want like just a answer. I want like an opinion on it. Oh, I really don't think that one is a good portion size, and, you know, an honest opinion. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're going to order food from this restaurant. So I think you don't have to lie and be like, oh, this thing you want, you know, yeah, you should definitely get it, even though I personally don't think it's a good item.
Okay. I think we are saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe a little tweak here and there, but very similar. That's probably my number one pet peeve, is that. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I will say, I think we see eye to eye on a lot of food stuff, Iffy, which is, you know, this was a crapshoot. I didn't know you before this. It's always a risk going in raw dog on these podcasts.
Yes.
There's got to be a better way to say that. But no, you are a man after my own stomach. So it's always good to meet comedians and comics who care about food, and you know, we use our money in the right places, which is $1,200 meals at Ennaka. But yes. Thanks for being on the pod. Tell the people where they can find you.
You can find me at Iffy Whiteyway on Twitter or Instagram. I'm on both those sites, so pick your poison. And definitely watch Grand Crew on NBC. And Twisted Metal is coming out on Peacock. Check that out. And, you know, if you follow me on those things, I might be announcing some other cool things soon. Just stay tuned.
Ooh, is dropping some breadcrumbs,
yeah,
baby.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Iffy.
Of course. Thank you.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.